What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Greg as we sit down to talk about one of the funniest movies made in the 1990s. Jim Carrey, Jeff Daniels, Dumb and Dumber. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here in the Because Movie Network. Hope you're doing well. And I'm joined by Greg Gregory. Greg, how are you, man?
Hey, good, man. What's up?
Good to hear your voice, man. It's been a little while.
Yeah, man. It's good to be back, as always. Talk about some stuff that I know about, for sure.
You've been busy the last month or so I didn't want to disturb you. So it's good to have you back on, though, now that things have calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, man, it's good to get away for a little bit sometimes, so I always enjoy it.
Cool. Well, today, we're going to jump right in, because I do have a little bit to say. Before we go ahead and get started, that is. I always say this before we go ahead and get started. Go check out becausemovienetwork.com for our archive. Go check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's where you find all the latest news and activities going on. And don't forget to check out, if you are not listening to this in your podcast of choice, if you're coming across this not on any of these, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, and Amazon Music. And I've got that down from playing the 90s game so much the last couple of weeks. It's been So, Monkey Island 3, that's what's coming up next. So, keep an eye out for that. Anyway, so we're here today to talk about another Jim Carrey movie.
Yeah.
And this was the third big movie that he did in 94. We're talking Dumb and Dumber.
Okay, so it was Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber. What was the third one?
The Mask,
that's right. You know, I don't think I ever really properly watched that one, so maybe that's why I wasn't thinking of it. I know I've seen snippets of it, but
that one right there is really, really good. You've got cartoon elements in there?
Certainly, yeah. I know they were. I heard that there was a lot of computer work. You know, that was kind of in the early stages.
Yeah.
You could argue. So I heard there was definitely some groundbreaking a little bit in that regard.
And because of the character that he's playing, too, I mean, it allowed him to be Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah, he was, yeah. Even if you've seen the previews, like, you just see, you know that he's full tilt. Like, he's, like, not holding back at all. Kind of like the Riddler. I feel like he did that Riddler the same way.
Yes.
And that was kind of around the same time, too. So, yeah, his cup was running over. And I think, I don't know if this movie would have been so popular hadn't it been for Ace Ventura, to be honestly, you know,
no,
I mean, to
I
be
don't
honest,
think so.
That cast and the writing and just his performance, you know, it really set him up for success.
And we've covered Ace Ventura, of course, last season. So if you want to go ahead and check that out, go check out our archives. But Ace Ventura was the springboard to his career in the early 90s. Definitely.
Yeah, totally.
Because, I mean, Carrey was just another guy, another white comic on in living color.
Yeah, he was just kind of, he really stuck out. I mean, honestly, not just because he was the only white person on the cast, but also because his comedy wasn't subtle. Like, his comedy was totally in your face. Like, he was part of the original cast, and one of the first skits they ever did was Fire Marshal Bill, where he lit a aquarium on fire. He was describing some type of like hypothetical like fire emergency situation, and he ended up him like dumping butane on a fish tank and lighting it on fire.
Oh my!
So yeah, he was never been afraid to push the envelope, and I think he was allowed to spread his wings in that regard with all three of these movies, actually.
Yes.
So and I think he, you know, did approach each one in a different way because of he's a methodical actor, a method actor.
Yes.
But his chops were really, really on display on this one, certainly, especially his improv.
Well, it's not just Jim Carrey, too. You got to give an equal shout out to this movie to, I'm going to get it right, to to Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's known as a more dramatic and like serious actor. He was just in the movie Speed recently as well.
Yep.
He was played a very there's some comic relief in it and even from him, but I mean for the most part it's a serious role.
Yes.
So I was surprised as a kid to see him do Speed and then do Dumb and Dumber. I was like, wow, like these got some range, you know.
And not only that, I mean, the chemistry that they had together in this movie was, I mean, it was like pouring gasoline on a flame. I mean,
yeah,
they nailed it.
It was perfect. It was an unlikely pairing, but it worked, you know. And they, you know, I think Jeff Daniels knew his place. He knew he wasn't gonna outdo Jim Carrey. Like, no. You can't try to top him. All you can do is just try to match his energy and just feed off of what he's giving you. And I think that's why it works so well, because him being an experienced actor, he knew that it was all about, you know, letting him take the reins and kind of being the Beavis, or, you know, the secondary guy.
Well, you know, this like I said, this is a fantastic movie for those nerds like myself. It's a comedy movie. It was directed by the Farrelly brothers.
Yeah, who are kind of like semi legendary in the cult circles.
Yes,
for a lot of different, some really really good films they've done.
But they were unknown when it came to this one. This is their debut, believe it or not.
Certainly, yeah. In hindsight, certainly they're respected. But yeah, that's a strong first offering, though. You'd have to offer.
I mean, that could be worse debuts.
Sure. No, certainly.
This came out on 16th of December 1994, and made $230 million at the box office with a critical rating of 75%. So
that's some insane profit. It's a profit of $230 million. That's incredible, man. I think they'd have been happy if they'd have made, you know, $50 million off of that.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because I mean, the budget was only $17 million.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot, but for the amount of money they were spending on blockbusters like Die Hard and some of these other ones, Waterworld, you know, that was a pretty modest budget.
I'm one of like five people who like Waterworld.
I've never given it a full try. I've seen snippets of it, but yeah, I guess it's another one I need to put on the list.
I thought it was a good movie. I really did. It's just Kevin Costner is very, very, he couldn't carry a one-person movie.
Yeah, he's kind of samey.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know,
Robin
Hood.
He kind of has like one mode, one thing. But yeah, I mean, if you like him, you like him, I guess. So.
So the Farrelly brothers, this was their debut, and they've been trying to make a movie for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And the agent ultimately told them, look, produce your own movie. Write a script, shop it around, we'll get it made. So that's
what
they...
Go get your own groceries and bake your own cake.
Exactly. And
go sell it. Yeah.
After the script was accepted by the studio, they went looking for Harry and Lloyd. And right. Nicolas Cage, of all people, was the original first choice for Harry.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, man, that would have just been a totally different film with Nick Cage playing Harry. Like, I don't know if that would have worked, but so I think it kind of worked in their favor that they got Jeff Daniels way they did.
Yes, Jim Carrey and Nicolas Cage were close friends at that point. Now, I don't know if they still are. Really? They had a falling out around about the time Man on the Moon came out. Because both Nicolas Cage and Jim Carrey wanted to play Andy Kaufman.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah, they're both eccentric and have a lot of money, and they're method actors. See that? Yeah.
Jim Carrey went to Nicolas Cage, all offended, saying, hey, they're asking us to audition for this role. Don't they know who we are? We're Jim Carrey. We're Nicolas Cage.
We don't
audition.
We get picked. Yeah.
What Jim Carrey didn't tell Nicolas Cage is he sent in an hour audition of him being in character as Andy Kaufman to the studio.
Oh, okay. That's, wow.
So
okay.
I think they'd have fallen out over that one.
Yeah, that's a little, that's the, you know, on the playground where, like, one person would get behind the other person and then someone would push them and they like fall over like completely. Yeah, it was like the adult version of that.
it cost Nicolas Cage a lot of money. Talking of a lot of money, Jim Carrey was offered $750,000 for the role, and then Ace Ventura came out.
Yeah, that changed some stuff, definitely.
I mean, if they got Jim Carrey for $750,000, that would have been a masterstroke.
Yeah, that would have been, like, especially if it was, like, they were free and clear. They didn't have to pay any, like, royalties on the back end or, like, any points or anything like that like, you know, some of the contracts, they get a percentage of merchandise or, you know, the real money from what I'm hearing is actually in syndication.
Yes.
So that's what agents always look for, is to get syndication rights, or like syndication points, like to get 10% of every syndication per whatever, you know, so they negotiate some kind of deal. So the people that you know, like Friends and some of these giant, you know, sitcoms, The Office, like there's still people in those shows that are still getting checks every month those syndications. It's pretty crazy. So if they could have, got him free and clear for $750,000, that would have been the steal of the millennium right there. That would have been insane.
Well, unfortunately, they were able to settle on $7 million, which 10 times the amount, but you had 10 times the reputation at that point too.
Yeah, he was going to be a draw, so it was a gamble. But I mean, when you look at the numbers up at the top, I mean, like I said, that number probably would have been a lot lower if he hadn't had the clout, or if they had a different, lesser known person there. So I feel like it's congruent. Like, it was a sound investment.
Oh, yeah. Because this movie wouldn't have worked without Jim Carrey.
No. He was the catalyst of the lightning rod, if you will, of the whole movie, for sure.
And Nicolas Cage wanted an extra $2 million on top of his fee, and they balked, and he walked away from the project. So they were considering Chris Elliott and Rob Lowe to play Harry. Now, I'm not sure who Chris Elliott is, but I know who Rob Lowe is.
Yeah, Chris Elliott, he was in There's Something About Mary. He was also in Groundhog Day. He was the cameraman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but his
I know the face, but not the name.
Yeah, he's kind of a character actor, kind of like Margot Martindale. Like, he just kind of he's never really had like a definitive starring role. He's always kind of been like a B or C character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's extremely talented. I think that he could have pulled off Harry better than Rob Lowe. Like, Rob Lowe's old school. He's got some really good chops. But Chris Elliott's just, he's got more of that style, that he's kind of wacky. Like, Rob Lowe, but still, that's pretty impressive that they had those two guys and still chose Jeff Daniels. I guess they really saw something when he worked with Jim, because, I mean, you got to see what that looks like.
And you got to have, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the chemistry. I don't think, you know, Chris Elliott is now, I know the face, you know, he's the guy from Scary Movie 2 with the hand.
Yeah. And, yeah. <That's> strong face. Yeah.
He pulled that off to, you know,
the timing on it. You know, he's like I said, he can totally do comedy, but I think at the end of the day, it literally came down to, hey, who's looking the best with Jim? Like, who's working well with Jim? So,
and it came down to Jeff Daniels. So the studio asked him it was the studio's decision, not the production company's decision. So Charles B. Wessler and the Kajita Motion Pictures Corporation, they had no say in this, and they made an insulting offer of $50,000. Take it or leave it. And to everybody's surprise, including Jim Carrey, he took the money. So that's an investment right there. I don't even think he got residual rights or anything like that.
I was just fixing to say, I wonder how, you know, maybe he had a strong back-end deal or something, but I mean, if that was, they were free and clear on that, man. Like, that's, dude, just the way the world works now, that's straight up robbery.
Oh, yeah.
Because your intellectual property is going to be proliferated in so many different ways these days.
Yeah.
I know in 94 it was a little bit different, but still all one and the same. Anytime that movie is screened, you know, you should be, as the person who starred in it, you deserve a little bit of it. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, it wasn't a clean acceptance either, because the production scheduled a whole week of filming of Jim Carrey's solo parts. So wherever Jim Carrey was doing things by himself on screen, that was in the first week of filming. They didn't shoot a single scene with Jeff Daniels in, because they were like trying to get him to quit.
Oh, okay, like the limo scene.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to think of all the ones where he, or at least where he's either solo or he's not in it. The dream sequence where he's in the lodge. Couple of, yeah, there's four or five of them that I can think of where it's just him. That's interesting. Huh. I I guess they maybe they decided they had other plans and it just didn't work out that way. Or
well, after Jim Carrey stormed the director's room and said, "Okay, it's Tom, let's do this," you know, then because basically he pulled the Bruce Willis line. The Bruce Willis line is who's your second choice to play John McClane? That was always that was always his line during Die Hard. Whenever the production company was trying to change something, that he didn't want, he'd go, "Okay, so who's your second choice to play John McClane?" And they'd back down. They'd back down. Okay. So the minute they put them together, that's when the chemistry really, really hit it off. And they actually improvised a lot of their scenes together.
Yeah, yeah. It has a natural feel. Like, sometimes it's hard to tell, like, what's scripted and what's not. Because they really get along really, really well. And just that their timing is really well together.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, like the tag scene in the van, that was improvised completely. And the scene where I had it written down. Hang on one second.
The scene, the most annoying sound.
Yes, the most annoying sound in the world. That was Jim Carrey started that, and then Daniels joined in as he made the noise. So poor old Mike Starr, he had no idea what was going on when he was in that van with them, when he was doing that. That irritation was like legit.
Those are all genuine reactions. Yes. Yeah. See, that's really the best way to do it. I've heard in horror movies sometimes they won't let the actors see the bad guy.
No.
Until it's time. So they can get some natural reaction. So that makes sense to kind of do that from an improv angle to get a natural reaction. Yeah. So that's really good. That's some funny stuff. That one and the one at the convenience store, but I think we're going to get to that one later.
Oh, we will. So this is Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, like we said, playing Lloyd Christmas and Harry Dunn. You've got Lauren Holly, her role was small but important. In fact, yeah, she was the catalyst.
Yeah, absolutely. I was about to say the plot is kind of focused around her and her family, and the how, you know, her good looks is kind of what gets Lloyd entangled into the whole thing.
Right. And then you've got Charles Rocket, who plays Nicholas Andre, Mike Starr, who plays Joe Mentalio. Okay,
Mentalino?
Mentalino, yes.
But they call him Mental in the show or in the movie.
Carol Duffy plays Shay, and then you got Harlan Williams, the funniest man in the history of Hollywood, in my opinion.
What if he played Harry?
That could have worked.
I think that'd have been really, really good, actually. But yeah, his role's brilliant, though. He does, it's almost like a cameo, really, if anything. But yeah.
And the same thing with Cam Neely as Seabass, another Canadian comedy fella who who landed on his feet with a role with Jim Carrey.
Oh, his like, you know, there's those actors who like are really good with words, like delivering lines and stuff like that. Okay, yeah. Well, Cam Neely is a guy who's really good with his face.
Yes.
Like there's a scene where he goes through like a full range of emotions without saying a word. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
But yeah, that's, you know. Excuse me one second. My brain just went completely and utterly blank. But he used to be a hockey player.
No, who, Cam?
Yep.
Huh. Oh, interesting.
He used to play for the Vancouver Canucks and the Boston Bruins.
Oh, okay, so a real hockey player. Wow, okay.
And
wow.
He had a 15-year career.
Holy cow.
That's at least... That's at least according to my friend Wikipedia.
That's the mad respect right there for hockey players, man. That's a really, really tough sport.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I went to a hockey game once, and I went to see the local hockey team, and they were just beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, more so than... you gotta be an awesome ice skater first.
Oh, yeah.
And then you gotta be good at hockey. Like, wow. Okay. Good on you guys. Like, wow. Yeah.
So, we've got right here, we've got Lloyd. Lloyd is a simple-minded limousine driver in Rhode Island who becomes infatuated with a passenger, Mary Swanson, as he drives her to the airport. That's before he got lost and asked an Austrian lady to put a shrimp on the barbie. So already off the bat.
Did he really get lost, or was that just like an excuse to try to talk to the lady? You know? I guess I'll never know. Knowing Lloyd, maybe both.
He drives to the airport. Mary's heading home to her family in Aspen, Colorado, but on her way leaves a briefcase alone at the airport. Lloyd notices this and retrieves the briefcase before a pair of thugs arrive to pick it up, dashing ahead of them to snag the briefcase. Lloyd is unable to catch Mary in time and is left on the ramp of the airport with a briefcase in hand. No, he wasn't. He fell off the jetway again.
Again.
Yeah.
I like how that's his opener when he gets home. He's pretty casual about it. So I'm guessing I'm going to guess like over under like 3 to 5 times, like ish, you know, like I think we're more than two. I think it's safe to say it's more than two.
There's a cartoon called. Go ahead.
No, I was saying he was just so casual about it. Like it had to be more than two.
There's a cartoon called Phineas and Ferb. One of the main characters says, if I had a nickel for every time this happened, I'd have 2 nickels. Which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened more than once. So, yeah, I fell off the jetway again.
It definitely
did. It's okay. I'm the limo driver.
He flashes his badge like he's in the FBI or something.
Lloyd's roommate is Harry Dunn, a pet who is in the pet grooming business and recently spent his life savings turning his van into a sheepdog. So,
yeah.
I thought he owned the business when he first showed up, because nobody would do that for their employer, surely.
That's how it sounds, like, the way that he presented it. So, that's kind of what I was assuming when I was a kid, because, yeah, once again, like, who's investing that much in, as a hourly employee? Like, not using my life savings for that. No, that's not happening.
So what happens with Harry is he's on his way to a dog show, and he personally groomed and primped all the dogs himself and then fed them hot dogs and hamburgers on the way to the place while driving around like a madman with ketchup and mustard in the back of the car.
Yep.
You may want to run a comb through them.
Definitely. Yeah, a wet one with some shampoo and water.
Right as they showed up to the dog show.
Yeah.
And so they basically, he got fired.
He called her Noogie Burger, too.
Noogie Bone.
It's like, Noogie Burger.
So they both lose their jobs. They end up back at the apartment, and they're just absolutely distraught. So
we got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.
Yes, we'll get to that here in a second.
Sorry,
I love that line.
He delivers it with such gusto. Like I really feel his pain.
Thinking that Lloyd is a professional hired by the Swansons or even an FBI agent, the thugs extract revenge on Lloyd and Harry. Before returning home, they're alarmed by the thugs at the door, one of them being armed. Believing them to be debt collectors, the two escape through a back window with the briefcase. While the pair are looking for a new job, the thugs ransack the house. Well, they didn't ransack it. They said they were going to ransack the place to leave a message. I don't think they're going to get that message.
Yeah, it's already pretty disheveled, and you know, it's like a full on flop house bachelor pad. Like a woman probably has not stepped in there in ever.
Right.
So there's really no motivation to keep it tip top, or
they got worms.
Yeah, I got worms. So we're going to call it,
because they had a giant worm farm in the living room.
Another reason why the ladies aren't stopping by, probably. So
I wouldn't stop by.
Yeah, it probably smells great in there.
Oh. Probably smells like wet. It's like sweat and ugh.
Wet. It just smells like wet mud.
Yes.
And this faint smell of poo-poo. Like, that's all it is. Because eventually in that tub of... In that thing of worm, that worm tank, eventually it's the ratio of dirt to poop is just going to keep rising.
Yes.
Because, I mean,
they're not going
to
clean
it.
They're
in a tank. Has nowhere to go. I mean, unless you're adding dirt, taking it. Yeah. Anyways. can't smell good in there. That's all I'm saying. So yeah, what kind of message are they going to send by just, you know, messing up a place that's got a big, huge worm tank? So what do they do?
They actually take Harry's beloved pet parakeet, Pet Petey, and they remove its head by hand. You don't see this on screen. It's just, you know.
He just reaches
into the cage.
Lloyd comes home. Harry's upset. And then there's a part where Lloyd walks up to the bird cage and looks in. His reaction. He's so good. Like, they really had the physical comedy. And, like, I wonder if Jim was, like, coaching everybody on, face, because like he's really good at that, and it just seems like everybody in the movie was too. Like they were all
of the fish expressions on kilter, like perfect.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, when they get back from running away, they leave for a couple of hours. They come back, and Lloyd ends up going to do a beer run, just to get the essentials.
Just the essentials, the ping pong ball and the oversized cowboy hat and the two cases of beer and then the magazine that he tries to get.
Tries to get the magazine called the Rhode Island Slut.
Yeah, yeah, because that's just going to be out on a street corner all the kiddos by. Daddy, slut. Yeah.
Yeah. and what happens? Well, he gets his wallet lost in the newspaper thingy.
Yeah, he's trying to do the swap. Like, he's got his wallet, and he's like reaches in and he tries to grab it with the wallet in his hand, and he ends up like just dropping his wallet as he pulls it out. Yeah, so he's in a conundrum because he needs the money to get back into it to get his wallet, and the money is in his wallet. So, you know.
So he has to run and go get a quarter or two, and he ends up asking this sweet old lady in a motorized cart to watch over his beer.
Yeah.
And senior citizens. I can't remember exactly what he said, but
senior citizens, while considered a drain in society, can still have their purposes. Something like that.
As he runs off, don't go dying on me.
I was just about to say his tone is great, but his words, like, if you'd have flipped the tone, it would have been like the nastiest thing anyone's ever said.
Oh yeah,
like the tone is what saved it. But yeah, the don't you go dying on me? Those face in the dirt, like rah, 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 like.
Well, she doesn't totally. She doesn't go dying on him. She actually steals everything that he had. he walks back in. Walks back into the apartment. Where's the booze? I got robbed by a sweet old lady in a motorized cart.
And I didn't even see it coming.
Oh goodness! and that's where Jim Carrey finds out that Petey has been not Petey. That's not Petey. His name, the bird's not Petey. Petey's the kid in the building, which we'll get to here.
No,
in a second.
Petey's the parrot. Yeah.
No, yeah. Petey is the parrot.
Yeah, Petey's the parrot. The blind kid. I can't remember his name.
I'll have to pull that up because it's going to drive me crazy. So they catch a plan, and the plan is to go somewhere warm. Somewhere where the beer flows like wine.
Some place where the women instinctively flock, like the salmon of Capistrano.
It's a very, very good speech.
There's some incongruities in it, a little bit. I mean, I guess Aspen's warm in, what, like July, maybe? August, so it's warm sometime. But overall, I would say the average temperature there is probably like 40, 45, maybe? So wouldn't say it's warm.
But, no, yeah. I mean it's.
But it was a good enough call to action to get everybody on board. So I mean, it served its purpose.
Okay, the kid's name. Okay. Okay, I'll tie this in because this is good.
all right.
So they decide to go to Aspen after a brief argument. You know where it goes? Yes. Like, real mature about everything.
Certainly.
So I want somebody who can connect us to the social pipeline.
So I want to go somewhere. When I know someone, you could possibly... Yeah, exactly. Most of all, I'm tired of being alone. I'm tired of being a nobody.
And that...
I think everybody can kind of relate to that in a little way.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that, like, even though he's presented as an ignoramus, kind of. You know, there's some value to that. Like, there's some true merit to what he's saying. It's relatable and it's true, you know?
Yeah. So they decide to go to Aspen. And then it becomes a road trip. Now, the next day, the thugs learn their intentions, so they decide to pursue the two guys to make sure that they get their briefcase. Now,
yeah, they left a note that made them think that they were like professionals.
Yeah,
to some degree, which I thought was really, really funny.
And all this because they thought there was the gas man.
Yeah, because the guy, the hit guy, had a gas problem or something.
Is a ulcer.
The ulcer. Yeah, that's right.
So they literally thought he was from the gas board, and they keep calling him Gas Man, and he's like, how do they know I got bad gas?
Yeah.
These are professionals, man.
Yeah.
So they head on out, and to do that, they sold pretty much everything that they had and hop in the van and go away. Now, right. They've sold everything, including, you know, a few baseball cards, a sack of marbles. Petey.
sold my dead parakeet to a blind kid.
Billy's the name of the blind kid.
Billy, the apartment 4C. That's dude. Billy. Okay, Billy, Johnny, or Timmy. Yeah. Like, come on, those are like generic little boy names. Like, I should have been able to pull that one out of the hat. Come on.
And they probably pulled it. Probably could have Billy for the alliteration. Billy the blind kid.
That's not bad. I like that.
So one of the things that I loved is the fact that they already set up to annoy each other on the road trip. Like, he's running in the van.
Feels like you're moving at an incredible rate.
We're not even through Connecticut yet, and you're already annoying me. that light always got to me. So the first thing that happens to them is they stop at a diner to get food, and they meet Cam Neely's character, Seabass. And that's because Harry unintentionally threw a salt shaker at him.
Yep.
Who threw this salt shaker?
And then, Lloyd kind of throws him under the bus.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And he ends up hocking in his burger.
Yeah. And, and then Lloyd kind of makes fun of him a little bit for it.
Oh, yeah. Lloyd, what he does is he hatches a plan. See, he saw this in a movie once. He manages to convince the people working there that Seabass is going to pick up their tab as kind of an apology for the misunderstanding.
Yeah, he went to their table and said, "Hey, let me buy you a round of beers to bury the hatchet." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, okay, whatever, we'll take your beer." Essentially, they weren't like, "Oh, how nice of you!"
No, like,
they
were like, "Free beer,
yeah, whatever, give us beer." Okay, fine. So he goes to the counter and then. He's like, "Hey, Seabass said he wanted to pick up our check, you know." And he goes, "You know, blah, blah." He's like, "Seabass said that?" And they lean back and look at him, and he kind of just picks up his arm and just kind of starts waving,
as if to affirmative, kinda,
like that, like yeah. And she's like, "All right, okay."
And they steal everything. And so off
they
the
start
counter.
Just grabbing everything at the register and just loading it up, like a beef jerky and like magazines and like, yeah, it was great. It's pretty clever, actually.
It was pretty clever. Now, unfortunately, what happened to the person who did that in the movie? They caught up with him a couple of miles down the road and slit his throat.
And he gleefully explained as they were driving away. And I think Harry pooed his pants a little bit after he told him that. He looked pretty freaked out by that information.
Now, for the record, that is an actual movie. That plot line did happen in an actual movie.
Do you know what it is?
I don't know what the movie's called, but hang on. I can tell you who the name of the actor was.
Okay.
The actor was Jeff Daniels.
Really?
Yes. Let me pull this up real quick. So what happens is next is they pull into Pennsylvania. They're speeding and Lloyd has to go pee. Now, after hearing the fact that they caught up with a guy, slit his throat and left him for dead, he needs to go pee real bad. So what he does is he starts peeing in the empty beer bottles that are laying around the van.
Yeah.
And
well, it was going to be one, but then, you know, he got to the old, "I'm still going, but I can't stop because it stings." So he had to do the whole like like just switch off, like when you're running the relay race, you have to pass the baton.
Yes.
Like it's got to be perfect. Like just whoop. And so you can actually feel his urgency. They don't show it, obviously, but he's like, give me another bottle. Come on. Like another great just example of his physical acting. Like you can't really see what he's doing, but his face is selling it and telling you everything you need to know about what's happening. So.
Yeah, there you go. Hang on 1 second. Hang on. No, I can't pull it up. It's not showing me. But I read that in IMDb, so.
Okay, I'm gonna have to keep an eye out for that.
All right. Anyway. Okay. So. Forget that movie. it's going to drive me crazy. Let me see what else we got. But Harlan Williams, his character right here.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Pull over. No, yeah. It's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest. I saw this in the theater right around when it came out. That was one of the biggest laughs in the entire night. I remember that fully.
It's such a stupid joke, and it works perfectly. I mean,
it's all delivery. It was all delivery, dude. I'm telling you, every bit of it.
So they pull him over for speeding, and then he notices the beer bottles. And did you know it's illegal to have an open alcohol container in the state of Pennsylvania? If you didn't, you do now.
Yep.
So let me try some of that booze just to make sure I can write you a ticket. No, don't try. You shut your mouth, you pumpkin pie haircutted freak.
No, give me that booze, you pumpkin pie haircutted freak. Once again, it's all about the delivery and just timing. And everybody was just magnified by Jim because he's just the master of it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Tic Tac, sir.
Like what? That was so. I don't know. I don't understand that reaction fully. It's funny, but it's just like that must have been really, really horrid.
He would have found.
But there's so many red flags.
Yeah.
Like it's warm.
Yes.
There's many of them.
Yes.
Like the guy was holding five of them. You know, like I mean, so many red flags. So
he should have noticed being a detective, but.
I mean, didn't he smell it? That should have been enough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Like, oh my gosh.
So they keep on driving. And then you have the dream sequence. One night while Lloyd is driving. And that right there always gets me. I mean, always gets me. I don't know what the joke Jim Carrey say, Lloyd saying during the, you know.
You just hear the punchline.
Yeah. And
I always imagine what the front half of that joke is. I've presented that before. Around people who are good at acting and like improv and stuff and just are writing and just ask them, finish this joke. Here's the punchline. And it's always interesting. It's a good, I guess you think it's a good thought, like a group think project.
Yeah.
For creative people, something kind of like that. Anyway, so and once again, it's just all delivery. So he says, "Do you love me?" And she says, "No, but that's a real nice ski mask." And everybody else in the room just loses it. Like it's, and he's like throwing popcorn in his face and doing all this other.
he lights one of his farts.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know you could do that. Until watching that movie, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, it's methane. Oof. Very, very flammable.
Very flammable. Luckily, he did it with clothes on.
He can go the other direction, so they say you shouldn't do it.
No. For legal purposes, don't light your own farts, everybody.
Yeah, that's...
it's gross for a start.
If you get in the mood for that, just go watch Jackass. Let the professionals do it.
Yes. Bloody hell. Then you've got the bit at the restaurant where he ticks on every single waiter and waitress, including the chef, in Kung Fu 1960s movie style.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about that. And he, like, rips, is it the heart rip thing?
Yes.
He puts it in a doggy bag, like, hands it to him. Oh, I always thought that was really, really funny. Talk about delusions of grandeur, though. I mean, Lloyd's a pretty like feeble guy. Like he just, you know, doesn't have any real skills. He's not employed. Doesn't have a lot of money. Like, I mean, wow, he's just living in a dream world.
Oh yeah, and then they almost got run over by a truck.
Yeah,
they end up in a love nest in a motel room that charges by the hour. They're in the hot tub together, and
the heart shape.
Yes. Some, what's the matter, Harry? Some little filly broke your heart? Well, no,
it was a girl. I just love how he's just so literal. Like,
and then he tells
super literal.
He tells the story of lost love, of the time where he lost his girlfriend, took him to a place like this, and then a couple of weeks later she broke up with him. She started talking a bunch of crap about me not listening or something. I don't know, I wasn't paying attention.
I don't know, I wasn't really paying attention. I didn't, you know, honestly, that line kind of completely went over my head the first time I watched it. It wasn't until a couple of years later that I watched it again and I was like, yeah, well, no kidding, man. You were attention. Once again, another one of those movies that if you watch it again, you'll see like some visual gag or like just something you completely missed before. So,
well, it turns out that apparently Lloyd had a hand in that relationship ending.
Yeah.
At least it's insinuated, because when he mentions her name, he's like, yeah, I remember. I mean, yeah, I remember.
He's
her.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That whole thing.
So, they end up behind Metal and Shay, who decide to drive on ahead and fake a broken down car and hitchhike. His plan is to infiltrate them and find out what they know about this briefcase. So they pick him up,
right,
and they start playing tag in the car, which they don't have anywhere to go. There's only two. Hey guys, why don't you listen to the radio?
Radio? It's like, oh boy. When I first saw that, I was like, oh boy, something good's coming. And then, the one of the most annoying possible songs you could ever pick begins. Yeah, it's fantastic.
They start singing Mockingbird.
With the weird echo chorus, yes, rap thing. Yeah.
And Mental is getting really, really, really sick of this, and he's about to pull out his gun while they scoop another group of hitchhikers.
Yes.
And
make it even more irritating.
Yes, because it's a bunch of Hispanic refugees, it looks like. Just hitchhiking somewhere, ready to go. Let's pick them up. Mark, C.
C.
Yes.
C. So good. They don't really explain what happens to them.
No.
Maybe there's a scene they got edited out, or maybe they were just happy to go however far they could and just got off at the next stop.
I think they got off at the truck stop where they went and had the burgers and the chilies. Mm. So what happens is Mental finds out that the two guys are not professionals, not FBI, not US Marshals or anything like that. They're just a couple of idiots.
Yeah.
Who lucked onto something, and he plans to kill the pair of them with rat poison.
Right.
Well, what happened before that is that he convinced them to eat some extra hot chilies. Now, this sounds weird, but let me explain. He convinced them to eat some extra hot chilies. So while he's on the phone to his boss saying, I'm going to kill these guys, they load his burger full of these chilies without knowing that he's got an ulcer.
It's like a payback.
Yeah.
But I mean, in a way, like, he kind of started it.
Yes.
In a way, like, I don't want to, you know, like,
he didn't deserve to die, but it was his fault that he got the chilies on the plate.
It was an unintended consequence of his own. He laid the first ember.
Yes.
He sparked the first ember near the kindling, and it just kind of happened. So,
because what happens is he takes a bite out of his burger and his ulcer starts acting up. I mean, he
makes him essentially choke. Just starts going crazy. Yeah.
And instead of grabbing his medicine, they grab the rat poison that he was going to use to kill Lloyd and Harry. And bada bing, bada boom.
Honest mistake.
Six pieces of rat poison later, Mental is dead.
Yes.
And everybody who's involved in the all the bad guys, people are like, man, these guys are good. They took out our top guy.
Because they don't have the information that he had, so they're seeing it from a perspective of, okay, our guy finally got in with them, and oh wow, now he's dead. Holy cow!
After a couple
wow,
these of guys hours,
are, those they and they made it look like an accident because he did it in public, and everyone, wow, oh wow, these guys are good. Yeah, wow. So that's interesting that they're still in a totally different perspective of
right.
who they are.
It's like
Check, please. And then one of my favorite lines occurs after that when they're driving away. He's like, he blamed me. You heard him. Because he goes, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And there's a pause and he goes, well, not, or he says, he blamed me. You heard him. Those were his last words. And then there's a little pause and... Lloyd's like, well, not if you count that gurgling sound. I don't know why. It's almost like a throwaway line, but it's like the gurgle was very subtle. So it's another one of those things that, like, when you watch it again, you listen for it, and it makes it even funnier.
So the FBI are now hunting Lloyd and Harry, and it's very, very hard to track an 84 sheepdog, especially when Harry falls asleep and Lloyd takes over the driving. And he takes a wrong turn, and instead of ending up in Colorado, ends up in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Wow, I expected the Rocky Mountains to be a lot more rocky than this.
Yeah. John Denver's full of
I love that line.
That was they only got a couple of... Because this is PG-13, right?
Yeah.
So there's a limit to how many... S's and F's you can have. I think there's one. You can have one F and one S, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's the threshold. It may have changed, but that's. I think that was a good spot for that.
Oh,
for
yeah.
that one. For that one.
Definitely, because it was just like, wow, what a dump, you know.
Yeah, definitely wasn't what he was describing at minimum. Like, no offense to any of our Nebraska listeners, but let's face it, Nebraska's topography and Denver's couldn't be any more different.
Right.
Like, totally different.
Totally different.
Aspen, really.
Aspen, even. So what happens is Harry wakes up and realizes that they're not going to have enough money, gas, or food to either make it home or make it to Aspen, which always kind of... made me wonder how they were going to get back.
That's yeah, me too. Like, I guess they had all their chips and, you know, pushed all their chips forward. It's like the last, you know, they just really thought that Mary was going to be so happy and, like, that was just going to solve all their problems. Like, it's a good question, but, I mean, you know, I mean, basically just setting yourself up for having to walk back.
Right. You know, like, So Harry storms off walking and Lloyd drives off in the opposite direction. And then a couple of hours later, they meet back up because Lloyd traded the van for a small scooter.
Yeah.
Just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
another great delivery. Just good. You know, tone, like there's a tone shift there because at first you think that he's about to unload on him.
Yeah.
And then he goes the other direction. Yeah, it's really, really good.
I got 70 and miles to the gallon in this hog.
Yeah. He pats it like it's a steed. Yeah.
How many gallons do you think that thing held? Like 3?
Maybe 5. I think a little tank like that, 5 gallons maybe. So you get from, like, say, you know, here to, like, Dallas or something like that on a tank.
There you go.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah.
There you go.
Like, two people, I don't know. Maybe probably more 50 instead of 70 or whatever. But anyway.
But
it's definitely going to be a money saver.
Oh yeah,
the gas mileage, but it's not going to protect you from the elements, which we're going to run into.
Because they end up making it in there, and they're not wearing any cold weather gear. They're wearing, you know, warm weather gear. They're wearing like a thin jacket.
Yeah, they don't have any like mittens and or like, you know, deep cold weather stuff. Yeah,
one of the most disgusting lines in the movie. Harry, I've got to pee. Just go, man.
Just go, man. And then they're all, you know, he briefly enjoys the warmth, and then it turns into them being, you know, just icicles essentially in their lower regions.
Yes. So they make it to Aspen finally.
Yes.
And they go to locate Mary in the phone book. And they're looking for Mary Slippy, Slappy, Swanny,
Swanson.
No.
Oh, check the briefcase.
Oh, Samsonite.
I was way off.
And the sad part about it is he wasn't way off.
No, he was spot on before he decided to
look at the briefcase.
He was on it.
So they end up not finding her, and they have to spend the night in a local park. Essentially homeless now. They just travel across country for nothing. And
they get into a fight over gloves.
Yes. Because he wears extra gloves.
Yeah, and he never mentioned it.
Poor Harry. Harry's getting a lot on this trip, man.
He's talking about how he can't feel his hands, and Lloyd's like, oh, hey, man, here, have this extra pair of gloves. My hands are getting really sweaty. It's
like, extra gloves?
Are you kidding me? And this actually becomes a stroke of luck for them, as it were.
Yes, because Harry is so mad that he's going to throw this curse, the briefcase, into that pond.
Yeah.
And they end up fighting, Lloyd and Harry end up fighting over it, and wouldn't you know, the briefcase is full of money.
Mm-hmm. Cold, hard cash, and lots of it too.
Lots of it, and they decide that they're gonna be responsible. They're gonna get them a hotel, put an IOU in there,
meticulously take track of every penny. No expenditure is gonna go unturned and unrecorded. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah. So they end up blowing all the money.
Them rolling up in a Lamborghini and. Yeah,
tips, like $100 tips for the valets at the hotel, and
shopping like, sprees for clothes,
room
and
service,
and yeah,
where the crying into $100 note of bills.
Yep, watching AT&T ads, crying.
Yeah,
that was a sad commercial, though. I'll give them that.
Right. Well, they end up seeing Mary on the TV and figure out that Mary is actually in high society, so. There's a dinner coming up for the Animal Preservation Society, or the equivalent. I don't know what it was actually called. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was like an owl preservation society. Yeah.
And they decide to go crash the dinner in the most gaudy tuxedos you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, the blue one's not so bad, but it's really the orange one.
Yes.
The orange one, it's like, oh, like it's awful. I love it.
And they look like eccentric billionaire playboys.
Kind of do. They like Zuck would show up in that that orange one for sure.
Oh goodness. And they decide, excuse me, not they decide, Lloyd is too scared to go talk to Mary, so Harry goes and talks to her herself to try and, you know, reintroduce Lloyd and try to get everything, you know, squared away. You need the briefcase. We're just here to deliver you the briefcase.
Tell her I'm rich. Tell her I've got a rapist wit. It's another one of my favorite just throwaway lines. Also, the Samsonite line is actually foreshadowing.
Yes.
Which I think is absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to get to the next part of it.
So, Harry ends up on a date with Mary. Surprisingly.
Yeah. And ski date.
Harry lies to Lloyd and says they're going to be meeting at 8 o'clock in the local bar. So Harry shows up. Lloyd shows up at the bar, sees me at 8 a.m. And waits until 12, and he feels like he's been stood up. Meanwhile, Harry has an afternoon of his life with Mary. They go they go skiing and snowball fighting, where he dings a square.
She touched my hand.
She touched my hand. I love that line.
And then when Lloyd leaves the bar, Jim does an improv as Lloyd of the moon landing.
We
magazine
landed on the
clipping.
Moon.
Yeah. Like he's reacting to it like it's
like it's just happened.
Yeah, it's like it happened in 1969, I think, like 68. Yeah. Like it's a long time ago. But so that was really funny, little on the scene improv by him.
Now Lloyd has figured out that Harry's double crossed him. So
yes.
They decide before Harry tells Lloyd, well, I didn't mean 8 o'clock in the morning. I meant 8 o'clock at night.
Huh.
What kind of person?
I just thought she was a raging alcoholic.
So what happens is Lloyd spikes Harry's tea. They're going to have celebratory tea. Lloyd spikes it. 1/2 teaspoon for fast, effective relief. And then he pours the entire bottle.
And I love the face he makes. Ah. It's so evil. They use that in the trailer, actually.
So Harry ends up back at Mary's house. And Mary is ready to go, but there's a knock on the door, and then Harry all of a sudden starts getting the bubble guts, and all of a sudden it hits him.
You start you start seeing him kind of, and hearing some, and you know,
high class comedy
stuff's happening. Like he needs to get somewhere appropriate very quickly.
So he gets to somewhere appropriate very quickly and handles up on his business.
It turns out to not be the most appropriate place.
No, because it's not working.
You know, they should have put a damn sign on it or something.
That's
I put
right.
some tape over it, you know, but that's just me. But so can't blame somebody for pooping in a toilet when there's no sign that it does not work.
That's right. And Lloyd reintroduces himself to Mary because he's at the door and says, I have your briefcase. And she lightens up and goes right back to the hotel room. Now,
She ghosts Harry essentially, or just ditches him, not ghosts him, ditches him.
Yeah. So Lloyd and Mary end up in the hotel room, along with friend of the family, Nicholas.
So we got some, that guy.
Now, Nicholas, for those who don't know, for all intents and purposes, and this is not a spoiler, this is not a big reveal, it's only a reveal to Mary, because he's been shown throughout the movie as the guy pulling the strings with the bad guys.
Certainly, it has to do with the money and all that.
So he ends up falling to the hotel room and announces that he's the man who kidnapped Mary's husband.
Yeah.
And that the money that Lloyd and Harry have blown is the ransom money.
And he's...
He is so...
He's super... He's ready to kill.
He's ready to kill. But first, before all that happens, Lloyd asks Mary if there's a chance that somebody like him and somebody like her could ever be together.
And apparently Lloyd Christmas does not understand statistics very well.
No.
Or odds or any manner of math, basically. So
like
either that or he's just the most optimistic person that's ever lived.
Like 1 in 100? More like 1 in 1,000,000. So you're saying
there's a chance. he's not, hey, no lies detected though, bro.
No.
Like I mean
she said there is a chance.
He's super optimistic. That's what I'm going with. I'm a glass half full guy, so I'm gonna say he's super optimistic, and I respect that. I really do. There's enough negativity and badness or whatever, you know, bad stuff in this world. So why not?
Right. Now let's
be positive when you can.
Let's rewind the movie about 20 minutes, real quick,
right.
Before they ditch the car. They're filling up the van. And Harry gets accosted by Victoria Rothwell, who is FBI agent Beth Johnson. Now, she's going undercover, and she's actually been following them because she's been assigned to the kidnapping case. And
yeah.
So she give her number to Harry and, you know, hey, Harry, you know, just this is me flirting with him. Give him a number. Well, Harry ends up back at the hotel, and she's there and goes, hey, Harry, you never called.
Yeah.
And she explains the whole situation. Harry bursts into the room, sees the scene going on, ends up getting handcuffed to the bed with Lloyd and Mary as Nicholas is ready to kill. And so Lloyd and Harry argue about who's going to get shot first. No, shoot me. No, shoot me. No, shoot me. Fine, kill him.
Yeah, because he stands up and he tells Lloyd about what a great day they had. And she touched my hand. And then that's finally, he's like, all right, kill him.
And also called out Lloyd for stealing his girlfriend. He knew.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was being cool about it. I forgot about it. No, so he was being coy in the hot tub then.
Yeah.
He knew what was up. He was trying to preserve
the friendship.
Some friendship there and not put all his cards out at that particular moment. I understand that.
Yeah. Well, Nicholas shoots Harry.
Yes.
Harry falls on the bed and Lloyd gets really, really angry and starts yelling at him. All of a sudden, Harry rises up from the dead and shoots 8 or 9 times. Harry, you're alive! And you're a terrible shot!
It's like in the cartoons where you just like shot an outline of the guy.
Right.
Instead of like Adam. Yeah.
At that point, that's the cue for the FBI to raid the room and Nicholas is arrested. They meet up with the FBI agent again and he goes, you know, they came downstairs, told me what was up, give me a bulletproof vest and this gun. What if he shot you in the face?
That was a chance, or that was a chance we were willing to take. they really got me at the end, at the part coming up. When Lloyd meets Mary's husband.
Yes. There's a reunited between Mary's husband and Mary, and Lloyd is so angry he grabs a gun from a cop and fires 6 bullets straight into the husband.
Yep, takes him out.
Yep. Although that's just another dream sequence.
Just and it goes back to him just being not
cordial
that
and
sitting there and just watching his woman be whisked away by her beautiful husband
who she's deeply in love with,
and so happy to be with and not looking for or caring about anyone else.
That's right.
So I would say it's probably 1 in a billion.
All right,
honestly, at that point. It's still mathematically it's not impossible, it's just highly, 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 highly unlikely.
Very highly unlikely.
Yes, well, insanely.
That's unfortunately the end of our boys in Aspen. They're evicted from the city because they spent all that money. They get everything confiscated and resold to recoup it. So they you end up seeing them back down on a Nebraskan highway. First of all, they confiscate our goods. Then our hog breaks down. Man, when are we going to catch a break? And what happens? A bus pulls alongside them, full of bikini swimsuit models, needing a couple of oil boys for the tour that they've got traveling the country for the next couple of months.
And they don't understand what's been presented to them and point them to the direction where they could find a town where there would be tons of boys who would be willing to do that.
Yes. As the bus pulls off, Lloyd grabs Harry by the hair. Do you realize what you've done? And he runs to stop the bus. You think, okay, they've got it.
Oh, okay, so they have some sense. They've realized, okay, hey, it's a free ride. It's a job. We get to hang out with hot chicks. Let's do this.
Excuse me.
Nope.
My friend's a little slow. The town is in the other direction.
And then as they drive away, they talk about how there's just 2 boys are going to be really, really lucky.
But they'll catch their break soon enough.
One day.
And he said, someday we'll get our break too. We just got to keep our eyes open.
Very open. Very, very open.
And that's Dumb and Dumber. That is, I mean, it's a hell of a movie. It really is.
Yeah, it's held up well too.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, you gotta understand though, right? What this movie centers around 5 things, right? You've got greed, you know. You've got Nicholas is
kidnapping, ransom. Yeah,
yep. You know, example of how many friends you may have when you have riches. Harry and Lloyd lose their mind when they find out the briefcase is full of money. You know, they spend it on hotels and cars and clothes and, you know, it's play money to them.
Well, when you don't have that kind of money and you get it, you have never had that kind of money, so you just tend to spend it.
Yeah.
So that's what we saw that there.
You know, and then you got friendship, where the journey to Aspen tests Lloyd and Harry's friendship, but even before then, they're bickering back and forth all the time.
Yeah, there's some challenges there, but that's not uncommon for people that live together. Whether you're romantically involved or not, you share a space, you're going to have conflict sometimes.
Yeah, and then Harry eviscerates Lloyd when they end up lost.
Absolutely, yeah. He kind of unloads on him, and we see that again at the end that we just talked about, at the gun scene in the hotel room.
Then you got stupidity.
Certainly.
Because Lloyd and Harry spend all the money real fast. They kill Mental by accident using rat poison. They sell a dead parakeet to the blind kid, which, you know, that seems so long ago. It just seems like in the pantheon of things.
Sure.
Lloyd gets robbed by a sweet old lady on a motorized cart and he didn't even see it coming. Neither of them realize that Mary's just not into them.
Yeah, they both seem to think that I think that they are dumb enough that they mistake kindness for flirting.
Yes.
Because Mary's extremely kind.
Yes.
Like, that's just what she is. So just because, PSA, just because someone's being nice to you doesn't mean they're flirting with you.
Correct.
They can intertwine. They're not mutually exclusive, though.
Correct.
So just keep that in mind.
And, of course, trading the van for a moped. On the one hand, okay, it made sense, but on the other hand...
It was a bad trade, yes. Fiscally.
Yes.
But economically, like, I get where his stand on that, but fiscally, yeah, it was a bad trade.
It was a bad trade. Then you got love. You know, it's implied that Harry and Lloyd have been unlucky in love with the past. It's implied that Lloyd slept with Harry's girlfriend, who broke up with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she tried to tell him a whole bunch of stuff. He wasn't listening.
sure. Or, I don't know. I wouldn't pay attention.
Right. But in the end, you know, Mary's deeply in love with her husband. You know,
yeah,
and then essentially this movie, for half of it, is a road trip movie.
Certainly,
it's a
yeah.
standard road trip movie, you know, classic road trip with over the top antics. You know, the scenes with Seabass where he finds him in the truck stop bathroom.
Yeah.
That, we didn't mention that, but that was really good. You know, the trip takes both the toll on Harry and Lloyd driving from Rhode Island to Colorado. And they both sacrifice everything for this one road trip.
Yeah, they basically just abandon their lives in Rhode Island.
Just to get this briefcase back into the hands of who it belongs.
Without even knowing what was in it or much about the person that had it or what it was for, nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. Me personally, I probably would have tried to crack it open just out of curiosity to make sure it wasn't something. You know, do I need to call the cops? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It'd be that kind of thing. Like,
well, that's the thing in the first part of the movie. They go, you know, did you look inside it? No.
Yep.
It's locked.
It's locked.
Real tight.
Well. So they certainly did try, but failed. So that's fair.
So behind the scenes in this movie, Jim Carrey, as we mentioned, you know, improvised most of his scenes because he's Jim Carrey and he could have got away with it. Okay, here it is. The movie that when they scam Seabass is actually a film called Something Wild.
Okay.
So I might have to look into that.
Yeah, I gotta see that. Something Wild. Jeff Bridges. Okay. Yeah, he's good. Yeah. One of the other improvised things it's not listed here, but when he went to the gas station and came out and talked to the guys about their big gulps.
Yeah.
Big gulps. It's so funny. All right.
See you later.
Take it easy. See you later. Yeah, that's what it was. So that was completely improvised. The Farrelly brothers just said, hey,
this is what I need you to do. Go make it happen.
Just stand there. Just stand there with your drinks. Jim's just going to walk out of the store and over here. And we're going to do it like three times, okay? And so they did it like once or twice. And then the third time he walked out and he improvised that line. And so the reactions are like, they weren't expecting it at all. They're very taken back. So that's the one they ended up keeping. I thought it was absolutely beautiful.
It's one of those understated jokes in the movie.
Oh, there's another one. There's another one. When he mentioned the Samsonite when he was looking at the briefcase. Later on, when Nicholas has all three of them in the hotel room, and he says that, you know, he's like, this is my briefcase. And he's like, please, listen, Mr. Samsonite. And he's, before he starts referring to him as Mr. Samsonite. I thought that was so, so funny. So, it's like a good, like, like a flash forward when they mention it.
It's a good callback.
Yeah, it was a good callback to that. So if you're paying attention to that, and then that was a nice little nugget right at the end. It made me laugh so hard. I had to pause it. It said, like, laugh for like a minute and then let it go.
Well, Jim Carrey and Lauren Holly actually developed a relationship. So Lloyd did get Mary.
He got the girl.
He got the girl in real life, but they only married
a roundabout since.
They only lasted for a year.
That's a full Hollywood marriage right there, dude. A year. That's a full marriage.
You know who was a big fan of this movie?
Is that
Clint Eastwood?
That's odd.
Claimed that the friendship of Lloyd and Harry was the most genuine he'd ever seen in the history of movies.
Wow. Interesting take by an unlikely source.
Right.
Wow.
And you know the hotel that they used was the famous Stanley Hotel, which was the inspiration of The Shining.
I thought it looked kind of familiar.
Jim Carrey stayed in room 217 for the night and vows never go back to the hotel, and he will not say why. Very, very mysterious.
That's ominous. Jim's a very eccentric and creative guy, though, so who knows what was running through his head when he was in there. His mind could have been playing tricks on him.
Right, and then, of course, them walking off into the sunset was a nod to the Western movies that the Farrelly brothers love. So,
oh, nice.
So I think this movie's a 9 out of 10. Easy.
Yeah, I'd give it a 9 or a 9.5 because it's just, I mean, they did a lot with very little. It was just, it's just a classic. It's just great springboard for, you know, the acceleration of Jim Carrey's career. And we saw Jeff Daniels, you know, add another piece to his acting resume with a strong, you know, physical comedy showing. Yeah, I thought it was very good. Yeah, I'd give it a 9.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
I mean, it's aged pretty well. There's no jokes in there that you can look back and say that would be inappropriate.
Yeah, like Ace Ventura had the weird kind of back one-third end of it. This one's, I mean, I guess maybe if you wanted to get nitpicky a little bit about the sea bass incident.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of quasi-rapey, I don't know. Just seemed kind of like it made me feel uncomfortable when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And like I understand the comedic sense of it now, but I could see that it could be problematic in a certain
light.
Yeah, maybe to a correct person that's been through something terrible that I have not experienced. But other than that, yeah, there's nothing that screams like ooh, like oh god, I can't believe they did this. Like kind of like. You know, we've talked about a few of them like that. So, oh yeah, overall, I think I agree with you on that.
And of course, Jim Carrey, Jeff Daniels, their chemistry is unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
From an unlikely source, it released a sequel and a prequel. The less said about the prequel, the better. I have not seen Dumb and Dumber 2. I'll be completely honest. I haven't.
Okay.
It's not crossed my path yet.
I've seen all of them.
Any good Dumb and Dumber 2?
Yeah. But that was, I don't know. It was good to see them together. I think that was more than anything. It was just to see that they still had it. They still had a chemistry. I don't really think the story had a whole lot to say.
No.
It felt kind of forced at times. But it's just one of those things like, if all the Ghostbusters were still alive and you did a movie of them just kind of hanging out, talking, like I'd go see it, you know, just because it's the original, you know,
Ghostbusters by Kevin Smith.
Yeah. they retired and they work at a convenience store.
And for the record, I love Kevin Smith, so that's
he's amazing.
The Farrelly brothers went on to do some great movies too. Kingpin, That's something that I've got to talk about. Sarah refuses to watch Kingpin.
Oh, it's such a great movie, man. Bill Murray's fantastic in it. Woody Harrelson. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic.
Crazy movie. Uncle Randy Quaid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just a star-studded cast top to bottom.
And, of course, there's Something About Mary, which some people say was the funniest movie created in the 90s.
It's memorable. I'll give it that. I don't know if I would say you could argue it's probably top five, but I don't know if the most. I'd say you put it up there, but I don't know if the most. There's some, Scary Movie came out in the 90s. There's a couple other ones that were really funny.
Sadly, Scary Movies came out in the 2000s. Otherwise, I would
have. Did it?
Yeah, otherwise, I'd have covered it by now.
Damn, okay.
It came out just after my deadline.
My
deadline
is
a little bit into the 2000s.
Okay, the lines get blurred sometimes because, you know, like there's a bleed over between each decade a little bit. So
but
it's easy to...
Trust me, okay. Scary Movie would have been covered by now because that is one of my favorite movies, funny or not.
Gotcha.
Just absolutely hilarious.
And you had some other really funny ones like Gilmore.
Yeah.
And Tommy Boy was another really funny. I mean, but I would put it in the top five. Definitely, it's super, super funny. I mean, it's top to bottom. It's got action. It moves really well. It keeps you entertained.
Definitely. But that is it for Dumb and Dumber. So, Greg, man, it's been awesome to have you back.
Yeah, dude.
I'm gonna be back in a couple of minutes where I'm gonna say a few words on what we've got going on. So, you take it easy, everybody, and I'll be right back.
Peace.
See, a thank you to Greg Gregory for once again taking the time out of his busy day to take the time to talk to us, to talk about one of the greatest movies of comedy of all time. So, yeah, what are your opinions of Dumb and Dumber? Why don't you let us know on our social media pages, okay? Check out our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter pages. Let us know what you think of Dumb and Dumber in the comments. As you can tell, the 90s gamer is back. We are back looking for treasure and puzzles galore, looking at Monkey Island 3. The Curse of Monkey Island. So far, so good for Guybrush and his friend. Me, that is. And we are just on our way, plodding through, getting these puzzles under our belt. So if you haven't checked it out so far, go check out our YouTube channel. That's where you'll find The Curse of Monkey Island. So we're enjoying our playthrough there. So it's good. So next week, we'll be joined by Greg, so we can talk about four classic Genesis games, all in the sports genre. Look forward to talking to you about that. We're going to be talking about Evander Holyfield's Real Deal Boxing, EA's NHL, Madden 93, and FIFA 95. So get your old control pads out and remind yourself of the good times. So I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. I'm very, very sleepy. I'm just trying to make it through this day so I can get this out to you guys on time. I want to take a second to let you know where I've been. At the beginning of February, I had nasal surgery, and it was a pain, literally and figuratively. So I've just been taking the time to heal up and recover, and only now am I feeling good enough to come back. I'm recording this a couple of weeks before we release it, so, you know, it tells you how long it's taken me to get better and everything like that. But yes, I'm now in a much healthier place. I am doing a lot better, and I can breathe out of my nose for the first time in 20 years. So, hey, actually it's longer than 20 years. First time in 30 years, nearly. Good Lord, that's how old I am. I'm only 39 for those interested. But, yeah, so that's where I've been, and we're going to finish this season in style. We're going to do a few more episodes, and then we're going to call it good, and we might do a special episode in the middle of the year. I don't know how we're going to go about this, but Yeah, so I'm just concentrating on getting this season out of the way, and then we'll decide on what we're doing in season 10. But yes, season 9 is carrying on as normal, and we've got some good episodes coming up. So that's it. That's what I wanted to let you guys know. And that's it for this episode. If you want to check out our archives, go check out becausemovienetwork.com. That's where you'll find them all. Every episode of every show that we've ever done, ever. That reminds me, I've got to clean that up this weekend. go to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for the latest news and what's happenings. And of course, don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, and Amazon Music. That's where you'll find this podcast. Just in case you're listening to it on somebody else's phone and they download it through Apple and you get your podcast through Stitcher and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And with that in mind, we will be back next week. So, take it easy, everybody. Goodbye.